out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 24th of January, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Before I bring in my co-host today, who is Billy Roper, I've just got an advertisement that I need to mention. I should have mentioned it yesterday, but I forgot to. I just want to say that we've got the Southwest Forum on Saturday coming up. There's three speakers so far. Dr. George Whale, Max Musson, and Richard Edmonds. And there will be two more. There will also be a buffet. There's a security team there as well. And if you're interested in going, then you need to send an email to julielake1@btinternet.com. That's julielake1@btinternet.com. And it will help if you already know someone that can vouch for you, or if you make comments, or if people know you, because we do like to get some background on the people that go there, because we have had problems with infiltrators before. But I can say that the Southwest Forum is it's a really good meeting that we have there. And it's cross-party, so you get people from BNP, the National Front, UKIP, all sorts of people. People that aren't involved in parties, people involved in the Daily Stormer book clubs. And there's quite an age range there. And you must have heard some of the recordings that we've taken from there before. And, of course, it's a spin-off from the London Forum, or a franchise from the London Forum, rather. And there's also Boadicea events on at the weekend, and that's in the north, but I don't actually have any contact details for that. And they've got Alison Shablow, I believe, there, Mike Whitby, and I think Jez Turner is speaking there as well. But I don't have the contact details for that. But if any of our listeners know of anyone that's involved with Boadicea events, then get in touch with them, or get in touch with Mike Whitby, and go to them up north. And if you're in the south, come along to the Southwest Forum. Okay, well, today, as I said earlier, we've got Billy Roper from the Roper Report and the Shield Wall Network. Billy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Sven. Thank you for having me on. I was just listening to your advertisement, and it really struck me. You know, you and I have talked about before that we're about the same age, and we're sitting here now 4,500 miles apart with the North Atlantic between us. But the problems that we face with our shared common ancestry and culture and heritage that we're fighting for is being fought on these different continents in pretty much the same way, the way that you guys are organizing conferences and bringing together different organizations whenever possible to cooperate is very much what we're doing here in the States as well. So it's very inspiring and encouraging to hear that it's taking place in the UK as well as here.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I think we've got to attack the enemy on as many fronts as possible. I think we've got to have demonstrations. We've got to have people in the comment sections. We've got to have our own culture. We've got to make our own media with podcasts and videos. And we've also got to have meetings. We've got to have conferences where almost like think tanks where we can hear the great speakers that our movement has. And they can talk about the things that are important to them, and we can learn from them, and we can network and interact. And it's all a part of taking things off the internet and out into the real world. And I find these conferences are a really good thing. We have quite a few of them over here, and I know that they've got them over in Scandinavia. You've got them over there in America. They've got them in France. They've had them in Ireland. It's a really positive step for us, I think, putting these kind of conferences on. And of course, you're always guaranteed to meet really good people there. I know you had your Stormfront conference a while back, didn't you, Billy? And by all accounts, that went down well.
It did. And what I would like to encourage people to do is to get out from behind their keyboards and to actually while exercising some degree of caution, meet people in real life face to face, to be able to look someone in the eye and to sit down with them and have coffee, and to realize that you're not the last sane person left on the planet, and you have so much in common with your fellow white brothers and sisters who are undergoing the same psychological and social pressures that you're under. You have common cause with them, and you actually have in real life friends that you can build these networks, what we call the Shield Wall Network here in terms of white nationalism and preppers here in the United States, but regardless of where you are, to meet people in real life, and to not be recluses, and to not only just communicate through the internet and through social media is psychologically very healthy for our people and helps create organic and natural growth of these networks and these alliances, these coalitions that really result in real life, real world change and improvement for our people. But the first step is the encouragement of, you know, getting over the paranoia and getting out from behind the keyboard and meeting people in real life. And these kind of conferences are a great first step to encourage that.
Well, you can build up a support network, and support networks aren't just necessary for friendship and a sense of community. You need them there for in case any trouble happens. And I believe someone who is a part of your support network has recently had a lot of exposure and just lost his rather important position, I believe.
He did. His name's Tom Kaczynski. Over the last year, with the Shield Wall Network's growth, I've begun trying to build alliances with other regions of the United States where there are emerging white ethnostates. And I talk about this emerging white ethnostate phenomenon through the internal migration of people throughout the country as they vote with their feet and self-segregate back into racially homogeneous areas in my book, The Bulk. And as this demographic process really accelerates and kind of snowballs, we see that there are certain areas of the country where whites are moving to away from rather diverse areas. One of those areas is here in the Ozarks in northern Arkansas and southern Missouri, and another is in Appalachia in eastern Tennessee and its adjoining areas of Kentucky and West Virginia. That's the state of Franklin, actually, as it's emerging. And then out in the west, you have pioneer little Europes in places like Kalispell in Montana and Wyoming. And then you have Harold Covington's Northwest Front idea in the Pacific Northwest. And then up in the tip of New England, north of Boston, Tom Kaczynski began what he called New Albion. And like the Ozarks, it's over 95% white. It's a rather large rural area without any large metropolitan areas that poison it. And Mr. Kaczynski began founding New Albion first on the website, newalbion.org. And as he and I began to discuss our mutual parallel efforts and the cultural differences involved, we began sharing advice and stories of what had worked and what had not as we worked together to encourage one another to build our ethnostates alongside one another. And as we learned from one another, also how to recruit new people, how to radicalize them, how to cherry pick those in pre-existing organizations, we developed a bond, a real friendship. And I published quite a few of Mr. Kaczynski's newalbion.org articles on the Rope Report website at whitenationalist.com. And also on the Shield Wall Network website, which is aryanwarrior.com. And we developed that cooperation, that camaraderie, and his hits to newalbion.org increased, as well as did mine, by sharing his articles. So it was mutually beneficial. Unfortunately, the SPLC got wind of his efforts, and Heidi Byrick has claimed over the last 48 hours that they initially learned of New Albion through the Rope Report website. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but she's claiming it, dropping my name a lot in these articles. And I came home last night and I saw that my website hits had spiked, and I did not know why until I saw that she actually has now said that in the Washington Post article, which published what happened yesterday. Now, Tom pretty much knew that it was coming because the SPLC and other anti-white and Antifa activists have been trying to get him fired for the last week or two. And it came to a head yesterday when the selectmen actually did fire him. But he and I discussed what happened to me when I was fired from my long-term job when I ran for governor of Arkansas about a decade ago. And I gave him some advice, which he was successful in rolling over into his situation and did much better than I did, actually. He forced the town selectman, the equivalent of a town council, in order to be fired, that he would take his full payment package in addition to $30,000 lump sum payment so that he would agree not to sue them for violating his First Amendment-protected freedom of speech rights, because all of his political statements, all of his racial statements happened that they talked about either on pro-white websites such as the Roper Report or on Gab or on social media such as Facebook. None of them happened at his job or in his political office or in the public view. So these privately made political and racial views were used to fire him, but he received a $30,000 lump sum payoff from the town in order to not sue them. So that's a great victory for him. I've been talking to him a lot over the last 12 hours since then, and he asked me to tell everyone that he wanted to thank them for their support and for their encouragement, but to reassure them that he is not at all upset or depressed. He and his wife are happy that they're now able to be open and active white nationalist leaders in their communities. And he's going to write a book based on his experiences and then follow up that nonfiction book with a fiction book. He has a lot of plans for his leadership in the future. But he wanted to let everyone know that he had not recanted. He had not apologized. He had not backed down. And because of his courageous stance, he actually profited financially from it.
Wasn't he quite high up in his position? Wasn't he something to do with the town council? Am I right in thinking that?
He was the town manager, so that's the equivalent of being the mayor of the town, actually. So he was at the top of the totem pole in the town. But, you know, whenever you're in a situation like that, often you have political rivals who they want to always try to undercut anyone above them. And so he's certain that there were probably some local people who did try to target him for removal and cooperate with the anti-white forces. And, you know, they'll be dealt with in an appropriate manner eventually. But he is very actually satisfied with the outcome and now will devote himself full time to being a white nationalist leader in his region.
Well, he must have been well-liked to get to that position in the first place. Is that a democratically elected position that he was in?
I believe so, yeah. And he also, you know, had much support from the community, even up to the morning of his firing yesterday morning. He was not at all unpopular. There were a few people in the community, as there always are, who just simply did not want negative publicity for the community. They didn't want the statewide, the national media attention, you know, negatively impacting their tourism. But obviously, the vast majority of white people anywhere, but especially in rural areas like that, support the very basic and almost mainstream views that Tom Kaczynski expressed. And they were exactly the same mainstream views as America's founding fathers expressed when they defined who could be a U.S. citizen. And what Heidi Bauerk and the SPLC said was that people like the founding fathers of the United States should not have positions of power because of their views on race and immigration, because Tom Kaczynski's racial and political views almost exactly reflect the views of America's founding fathers. And that's what was attacked by the SPLC and by the anti-white forces. They make their stance quite clear. But he wanted to thank everyone for their support and to let them know that he is not unbowed. He's not bowed by this. He is undefeated. And I am very proud of him. You know, too many people in the public light are intimidated into apologizing or backing down whenever they're attacked like he was. But he and his wife stood firm and did not apologize, did not recant, did not back down, and profited significantly from it financially, as well as now being open leaders of our movement in their region and very well respected for it.
Well, I'm sure that surely must be well respected. He must be well respected to get to that position. And he surely he's still going to be respected after this as well. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if as you say, that they just don't want the town to be known for being racist. But they know that he's a good man and he's done well by them. And as you say, they probably sympathize with his views, but because the leftists have now got hold of it and are now accusing him of being racist, they'd be worried that the whole town will get called racist. So they've decided to take the easy route out. And instead of backing him, they've decided that they're going to have to ask him to go. And I think he's clearly done the right thing to ask for money there. Now I've heard of this happening before. I know of somebody else who had a well-paying job. He wasn't democratically elected, but he did have a very well-paid job doing computer work. And he was also quite prominent online, quite prominent about his views, quite prominent about being a nationalist. And you could see a lot of his work online. And eventually somebody who was haggling for his job pointed that out. and linked him to it. And he always thought he would be quite safe because he was very good at his job. But it turned out that he wasn't safe and they wanted to get rid of him on these grounds. And he did exactly the same. He said, well, if you want to get rid of me, I will go. But you have to give me a big payment package. And he did get a huge payment package. It has to be done, doesn't it?
When I was running for governor of Arkansas, what I did was I was fired from a job I had been promoted up into the high levels of management of over the course of several years. And I told them, you're wanting to fire me to avoid negative publicity for the company. You've obviously seen the media that I've gotten as I run in this campaign. I can guarantee you one thing. If you want to avoid negative publicity, then firing me is not a good step because I will tomorrow call a press conference and give you more negative publicity. The fact that you hired me knowing who I was won't help you. Or you can give me a substantial severance package and I won't say a word. And I'll also sign a non-disclosure agreement. So that's what I did in that situation. And Tom actually came out better than I did, but I was very pleased to see that he did so. And now he has the capital and the time and the freedom to make the best of his newfound notoriety and his new leadership.
You see, this is one of the things we learn about America and we learn about your free speech laws and we think, well, isn't it great that they can speak the truth and they're guaranteed that people can't discriminate against them because they have free speech. But then you hear of things like this going on. So you don't really have free speech because if you do speak the truth, then you end up losing your job. People like Tony Hovater, who lost his job once he was... Once it was found out that he was a nationalist, people like Tom Kaczynski, who's now lost his job because he's a nationalist. So you don't really have free speech over there, but it's done illegally. People say, well, we're going to sack you. You're going to lose your job. And then they have to pay out this extra money. So you don't really have the protections that you really should have over there. You know, you have these protections on paper. You can't lose your job for your political links. But the actual fact of the matter is that you can lose your job and it's done in an underhand way and you're asked to leave. And I guess it's important that our listeners know that if this ever happens to you and you're in America, you've got to ask for some kind of payoff so that you don't sue them. Because it is illegal for them to do that for any political links, isn't it, Billy?
It is. And the most important thing for people who are listening to remember is that what your company or your employer fears most is negative publicity. So you tell them that either you will be financially compensated to your satisfaction or you will call a press conference. And you can point out that obviously if the situation is getting media, you can get more media to it just by calling the print media or the television media or the radio media and offer to give interviews. And if they want to avoid that negative publicity so much, then they'll make it worth your while by agreeing to sign a non-disclosure agreement with you and then giving you a significant financial contribution to make sure that you walk away quietly and make sure that it's worth your while like Tom did. But, you know, most companies fear financial loss and it all comes down often to money. I know there in the UK, there's recently been a story actually still unfolding about a crisis that came down to money in the President's Club, where so many of these charities, which had benefited from contributions of generous donors, are now either refusing to accept future donations or actually returning past donations from charities that were given by the businessmen who are now, I guess, under scrutiny for one little business dinner. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. It's political correctness. I mean, if you aren't politically correct, that's the worst sin that you can possibly commit. That's the sin that Tom Kaczynski committed. He wasn't politically correct. And this is the sin that all these men committed by going to a dinner, which advertised itself as the most non-politically correct dinner you will ever go to. So it's not like they were saying that it was going to be anything different to that. And this female spy went along to it. And she said that all the women there were scantily dressed and they were hostesses and the blokes there were touching them on the arm or nothing out of the ordinary, really. And I suspect that the women there were probably strippers or sex workers anyway. They were paid £200 just for a few hours' work. That's not good, what you're normally going to be paid if you're just serving a few drinks. It would have been drinks and a few extras. And one of the prizes was plastic surgery for the wife. And the spy, the female spy, took great offense at this. But they've even had questions on the floor of Parliament. And I think one or two of them have had to resign already because they've resigned so that it doesn't look bad on the government. But they just made such a fuss about this. And the Great Ormond Street Hospital has lost all the money that was raised. £2 million was raised at this dinner. And it was all the rich men and all the businessmen. And what it shows us is that these rich businessmen, they don't want to be politically correct either. They don't want anything to do with political correctness. It's only one small group in our society that want to do this, and it emanates from the Jews and the people that work for the Jews, the Shabbos Goys and the left and this cultural Marxist idea. But businessmen, they're not interested in that. They are forced to go along with it in the same way that this has happened. This dinner was advertised as a non-politically correct dinner, and it got loads of people there, £2 million. It raised. They had David Walliams there. He was speaking there. He said he didn't see anything untoward happening in his tweets. Somebody else famous was there, and he said that he didn't see anything untoward happening. All we've got is this one female spy's word for it, and she's quite clearly a feminist, but everyone has just folded. They've all totally given in to the pressure and the blackmail from this Financial Times journalist to smear the dinner, basically. But just seeing the faces on these women in the Houses of Parliament, they're purple, incandescent with rage at this joke about plastic surgery for the wife. It's quite priceless actually seeing it. They're so infuriated. They really are. But yeah, it's the same thing, isn't it? It's just this, people are so frightened to be politically incorrect. But when you are, it totally disarms them. So go on, Billy.
Yeah, a lot of these feminists as on both sides of the pond are really unattractive women who I think are resentful of attractive women who men are attracted to. That's, I mean, if you look at, of course, there are a lot of Jewish feminists who are responsible for feminism. You look at Bella Abzug and Betty Friedan and all of the Jewish feminists who are responsible for feminism. They're not exactly very attractive women. And they're in the UK, you know, one of the ones who's raising her voice most loudly, I guess, is the Liberal Democrat Jo Swinson. And, you know, she's one of the youngest ones, I guess. She was born in 1980, so she's younger than most of the MPs. But she's also one of the more liberal, and she's kind of a nutcase, you know, Miss Swinson. I don't know if you're familiar with the fact, maybe you are, about every Easter she goes on this active campaign against chocolate Easter eggs. And she's actually every year an active campaigner because of the packaging. You know, since 2007, she attacks these confectionery manufacturers for what she sees as these excessive packaging of the seasonal goods, I guess for an environmental reason. So she's always attacking Guylian and Lindt and Bailey's and Cadbury for their chocolate Easter egg packaging. And then I guess she's also, after that, most famous for her peanut allergy in 2013. She collapsed after inadvertently eating a cookie. You guys call them biscuits with peanuts in them, and having, I guess, an apoplectic shock. So maybe we just need to slip her some peanut butter and be done with it. But yeah, Jo Swinson's one of the most liberal ladies in MP who is opposing the donations to these charities, which came from this business dinner. And I, for one, Sven, I'm just shocked and appalled. Shocked, I say. I think that Parliament needs to use taxpayer dollars to actually open a large investigation to get to the bottom of finding out once and for all why it is that this kind of thing happens, why it is that men are attracted to women, and what we can do to stop it, because it's horrible.
Yes, it's at the root of all the problems that they tell us we have, isn't it? Nadine Dorris is the main one that I saw that was making a fuss about this. But it reminds me, when you speak to these women and you are politically incorrect, they love it. They're not used to it. Everything that they say in feminist that they want, it's actually the opposite of what they want. There was a really good interview last week, a Channel 4 interview, Jordan Peterson with this feminist. And right the way through the interview, he was kept smiling. He kept his cool. He was placid. He was patient with her. And he kept saying, that isn't what I said. That isn't what I said. And he was bringing out all these statistics. And you could see that she was turned on by him. She was turned on by him. She thought she was going to hate the guy because he was this anti-feminist. And yet she really enjoyed it. And by the end of it, he defeated her in the argument. He got her to admit that you have to be able to insult people. You cannot make it illegal to insult people, which says, you know, you cannot have these hate speech laws because it just covers up the truth. And the way he said it was, look, I have been sat here and you've been insulting me for this, the whole of this interview, because you want to get to the truth. You have to be able to insult people. And she had to admit that that was the truth. And another very important thing about that is he said, but I haven't been insulted. And this is the thing that people seem to have forgotten, that it's of your own personal volition. If you get insulted at something, you take insult at something. You have to actively take an insult. You don't have to take that insult. It's something that you do. So anyone that claims that they're a victim from being insulted they've hurt themselves on purpose, basically. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean? You have to take insult. It has to be of your own personal volition. So all these hate speech laws, I think, could be defeated like that. And it was great to see her being defeated anyway in this interview. It's really not that hard to do when you're talking to feminists and anti-whites, especially the feminists, is just be normal. And they're just so unused to that. And it turns them on. It really does. They don't know what to do. They really don't know what to do when they meet a male chauvinist. And the ones that don't, I've never met any that don't, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Ms. Swenson is actually married and has a couple of kids. So she's not entirely ignorant of the biochemistry that actually occurs between men and women. It's not like she's just a lesbian, but she apparently doesn't apply that to reality. People divorce their own personal experience from these egalitarian theories. And of course, they're trying to enforce the equality laws. And now what they're trying to do because of this dinner is to go back to 2013 when the equality laws had the third party aspect stripped from it so that basically people could be held accountable. The people who held the dinner could be held accountable for the third party actions of the businessman who attended the dinner, who, not because the employers sexually harassed or discriminated against the employees, but because a third party did. So they're just trying to pass the buck on to the businessmen. And basically, it would discourage people from making charity donations, and all these charities are going to cease to benefit from it. It's really perplexing that, I guess it's the same thing on both sides of the pond, that we're facing the same kind of egalitarian, feminist, and liberal idiocy, aren't we?
Well, the thing that that I question is, if any sexual harassment was going on, then why haven't any of the employees said that they were being sexually harassed? Because they weren't being sexually harassed. And this is the point of the third party clause that was removed from the Equality Act. If it's a third party clause, it means that somebody who wasn't being sexually harassed or wasn't one of the sexual harassers can then report it as a crime, and it has to be investigated as a crime. Even if the girls there were quite happy to be wearing short skirts and get slapped on the ass, just because there's one other grotty feminist there who doesn't like it, she can then report that as a crime and it has to get investigated. That's what this third party clause is. And that's why the third party clause was taken out.
So that way the feminists could actually demand to be harassed themselves if they've been missing out on it.
Well, yeah, they've already got it in the racist legislation. They can claim that to be offended on somebody else's, for somebody else. So somebody can hear somebody saying something to loads of white people. There could be no Negroes there. And they could say, well, I'm offended on behalf of Negroes because of what you said. Or there may even be Negroes there going along with it. Yeah. Yeah. And they can say, I'm being offended on behalf of that person there. And then they can use the law to go after people. This is what they've tried to use in Twitter cases. There was another story that I was going to bring up, but I guess maybe we'll try and bring that up tomorrow. And that's Darren Osborne, who was the guy that ran over some Muslims last year outside a mosque. And he's in court at the moment. And brave man has pleaded not guilty to terrorism. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to pin the blame on Tommy Robinson's tweets. They're saying that he received a message from Tommy Robinson before he went out on his rampage of death. And the message from Tommy Robinson is just that he was following Tommy Robinson's Twitter feed on his daughter's cell phone. But that's going on at the moment as well, this trial. So hopefully we'll have some news from that by the end of the week anyway. Well, we're at the end of the podcast now, Billy. So I'll say thank you very much for coming on, and best of luck to Tom Kaczynski. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. So thank you very much, listeners, for listening. God bless and hail victory.